Welcome to Alpha Trader. It is a holiday shortened week, but it's not quiet, at least to start the week. The stock's lower, midday Monday as we're talking here, and the VIX is spiking. I mean, a lot of headline news. Congress expected to vote on another $900 billion stimulus for COVID relief and a plan to fund the government that's supposed to happen at some point today on Monday. And of course, new COVID restrictions around the world has sent oil tumbling and the work from home stocks up sharply. Tesla being added to the S&P 500. Here to help us sort all this out and much more is Jim Urio. He's director of TJM Institutional Services and a CNBC contributor. Jim, welcome back to Alpha Trader.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being back. So just big picture, you know, last week COVID numbers were going up and the headlines were bad and the stocks hit a record. Here we are Monday again, it's late morning as we're talking now. And, you know, the Dow's down about almost 1%. The S&P and the NASDAQ about 1.5% each, not critical after hitting records last week, but, you know, some weakness happening here. Does this have anything to do with the COVID headlines or what's going on in Congress? Or is it just we're heading into year end and people are squaring up positions? What's your take on big picture, what's happening in the markets?
I think there's a couple things at play. And one thing I was concerned about over the last 2 weeks, as we started to see that the stimulus package was at some point in time going to get passed, although I know that was touch and go. But we had rallied on a vaccine. We had rallied on a stimulus package. There seemed to be running out of things to rally about. And when we get there, and we've all been doing this a long time, then it looks for like the scapegoat of why to take a little off the top. And the UK restrictions, the variant of the virus seemed like a logical reason to sell this thing off a little bit. But I think it's a combination of where the market was. You mentioned end of the year, perhaps people taking some profits before the end of the year, something like that. I think it was more a question of timing and market position.
And I like the way you put it, running out of things to rally about. And I do want to talk about the dollar, because last time you were here, you, again, at that time, there was a lot of talk about the election and volatility around the election. And you said, watch the dollar. The dollar is the key. At that time, you said 94 was going to be a key level. If the dollar was pushing up against it, if it got over that level, we could have some weakness in the stock market. We never got there. The dollar failed there. Now, we're talking about the dollar index. It's now trading just over 90 as we're talking here today. So what is your take on where the dollar goes from here? And is it still what you're keying off of?
Oh, yeah. I still think the dollar is by far the biggest story in this whole thing. And I would present as evidence Bitcoin, silver, gold to a certain extent, although gold got pummeled quite a bit for reasons unknown. I have a feeling it was people probably selling out of their gold to get into Bitcoin. Maybe at least that's what some smart people I know told me. But all the things that appear to be dollar hedges have been rallying over the last couple months. And I think that, okay, and when I say that there is worry about a dollar collapse, there's worry about cavalier currency policies that our government and the Federal Reserve are engaging in, I'm not talking about like an 80% chance that we're going to have this big, huge dollar calamity. I'm saying the chances have gone from 2% to 6%, and that's very, very uncomfortable for a lot of people. There's an amount of debt that we have. There's a number out there somewhere where the world could become a little bit weary of the dollar. We're not there yet, but as we come closer and closer to it, just like you said, just today, we talked about throwing almost $1 trillion in stimulus, just creating it out of thin air. And nobody seems to care about this, except Bitcoin's telling us that people care. People are becoming a little more cautious. So I'm long silver. I am long Bitcoin, but a smaller amount. Because Bitcoin, I worry about, and if I'm rambling, just stop me here. But I worry about Bitcoin a little bit too, because I just never can get it through my head that governments around the world are going to allow for a medium of exchange that's outside their purview and they can't tax and regulate. So I do sometimes wonder if all of a sudden there's going to be a big headline that convinces people to get out of Bitcoin. That's why I'm long silver. But as I said, the dollar is to me the biggest focus of mine. Today you mentioned that it was above 90, and that's just because of a decent spike today off this news. And again, that's also measured against the euro and the yen, also two areas with huge debt loads and a relatively weak currency as well. If we want to really measure the dollar, it's measured against the Swiss franc, measured against Bitcoin, measured against gold and silver. Was that too long? I'm sorry. I'll keep my answer short next time.
No, the beauty of the podcast is we don't have to keep the answer short, and the idea is, I want to hear your fully blown out thoughts, and I think our audience
does too. I've had a little coffee and I keep rolling on. You know that, right?
But your points are well taken. So Bitcoin, first of all, I agree with you on your caution. And I've said that before. We had Dan Held on here, who's a huge Bitcoin bull, a few weeks ago. And I made that point to him too. And he basically said, you know, the genie's out of the box and governments aren't going to be able to put it back in. I'm not convinced that that is true. But the other thing you said, which I know that Dan would agree with, is this idea that people are looking at Bitcoin as a replacement for gold as a dollar hedge. Is that why you think gold hasn't been rallying as much as you might expect, given what the dollar is doing and the debt levels and legitimate concerns that maybe we are going to get an uptick in inflation finally in the coming year?
Yeah, I have to think that there was something going on with gold that I wasn't understanding when it was getting pummeled. And I've landed on the fact that it fell out of favor in comparison to Bitcoin. One thing I would mention to you, all the Bitcoin people, like the crazy Bitcoin people, which some of these are my friends, by the way, and I mean it in a very affectionate way, the crazy Bitcoin people, they'll say government can't do this. Government can't regulate it. They can't tax it. It's beyond what they can reach. That doesn't matter. My only point is that if they can convince the general hodler of Bitcoin that perhaps there is regulations coming and all of a sudden the selling starts, it doesn't matter if the story that started the selling was legit or not legit. Selling begets selling. And then all of a sudden we could have a bit of a spill. But to answer your question on gold, yeah, I think that was the reason.
Yeah, and by the way, governments very much can regulate it. And they don't regulate it at the individual level. They may not come after you and me. The way they regulate is by going after exchanges, by going after larger institutions that are dealing
Amen.
With Bitcoin.
And as soon as they start to come after it, that's when the mood can change, when everybody's long it. That's kind of my point, is that you are 100% right. And if people are holding it, everybody who's got a big position on something is very nervous about the next headline that's going to knock it off. And people start to head for the exits quickly. But yeah, great point.
And by the way, over the weekend, Steve Mnuchin gave Bitcoin a parting gift. The Treasury Department announced the proposal of some new rules that are going to make exchanges get all this information from their customers before they allow Bitcoin to be pulled off exchanges into private wallets. So a lot of Bitcoiners say, well, don't hold your Bitcoin on exchanges. Hold it in some hardware wallet that you keep in your pocket or a safe deposit box. But now Treasury is saying, you know, hey, if you want to pull whatever, $3,000, $10,000 from an exchange, the exchanges have to get information from you, and that's all going to get reported to Treasury. So it's becoming, the industry is becoming a bit more banking-like.
No doubt. But didn't you think that headline was going to knock Bitcoin back a bit? And it did at first. When I woke up this morning, it was down. And now it's gained that. Again, this is midday Monday. It's gained that all back and it's now positive. So whatever, the headline susceptibility doesn't seem to be at its height yet.
I know at least one huge Bitcoin evangelist, Raul Paul, former global macro guy with Goldman, who now lives in the Caymans and owns tons of Bitcoin. He says these kinds of things are good news for Bitcoin because as it becomes more regulated, that gives the green light for these institutions who have lots of lawyers looking over their shoulder to go ahead and put money into Bitcoin. Hey, look, it's regulated. It's banking-like. It's the Treasury's looking at it. We can go ahead and invest in it now. And he thinks this is like the next step to getting, you know, super wide institutional acceptance.
Okay, but you said the Bitcoin evangelist, and I like Raul Paul. I think he's very, very bright. I've done some things with him in the past, but to have someone who's, you know, heavily invested in it trying to turn what could be a negative headline into a positive headline, well, I mean, that seems like that's what he should be doing, right? That's what I would do.
He said that weeks ago, by the way. That wasn't something.
Oh, interesting. Right.
He wasn't trying to spin Sunday's news. He said weeks ago, he's like, we should be welcoming.
Damn right. When I'm up to my eyeballs on a position too, you should hear the twisting and turning I do. But yeah, I'm with
yeah. Right.
So I just want to ask Jim, or I want to make a comment and ask you to respond, Jim, about Bitcoin, and then we should probably move on since I don't think any of us it's our core area of competency.
Amen.
I've looked at Bitcoin as sort of a barometer of risk appetites, right? The fact that Bitcoin has rallied so much in the last 6 months tells me people are feeling pretty bullish and maybe they feel like the stock market is overextended and they're looking for another place to put all the money that's floating out there. Is it possible it's as simple as that?
Yeah, but sure. But because I think there's something that convolutes that viewpoint too, is that, you know, both the NASDAQ, of course, and the broader stock market has been rallying over the last 6-8 months too. And that you can look at that and say, well, you know, so risk appetite is coming back into the market. Or the second part of what you said, I think is more what's accurate, is that there's tons of money being thrown into the system globally, and it's ending up in certain things. And the U.S. stock market is one of them. And by this little rationale I'm giving too, the U.S. stock market is almost like a safe haven dollar hedge along with Bitcoin.
Right.
So I think to describe it as risk appetite, it is only partially correct. I describe it as like, where do you hide out? And if there's going to ever be a situation where we have a currency collapse, hyperinflation, even rampant inflation, you know, U.S. stock market is not the worst place in the world to be either as those assets go higher.
That is a great point. And certainly a lot of people, you know, again, we're talking here late morning on Monday, markets are down, but all the major averages hit record highs last week. So no tears being shed for the bulls right now. Jim, I just want to ask you, because you made reference to Raoul Paul and, you know, him twisting and turning on his position over Bitcoin. What is your biggest position right now? How are you positioned currently?
I've been a bull in the stocks the whole time. I've been worried about a position, about a NASDAQ correction. But if that happened, I thought it would be in the context of a Russell rally, or at least a Russell outperformance, as we kind of, you remember that we bought all the work from home stocks and all the big balance sheet tech names when the money was pouring in. If we're really having a reopening trade, which, you know, today obviously throws a little bit of a wet blanket on that, I think I want to be short the NASDAQ, long the Russell, which I was, and I've cut that out a lot. But now I went, if you people any watch my Twitter videos, last Tuesday is when I went long silver with a you know, as far as my biggest speculative short-term trade or medium-term trade, nothing for me is like a two-hour trade. Everything has like a two-week minimum time frame on it. That's the only way I make money. When I try to tick to top tick a market and make money every 10 minutes, I end up losing my shirt. But that would be my biggest swing trade right now, silver.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll be back with more from Jim Yurio. This is Alpha Trader. And you and Aaron both correctly note that, you know, the markets are off today, but they're coming off a stupendous rally since roughly Halloween. So they are, as you mentioned, looking for an excuse to go down, and they got it in kind of the lame, already priced in stimulus package and some scary headlines on COVID, particularly as it pertains to the UK and Europe. Do you think for the bull move to continue, is there a new news item that needs to be out there, or will people just realize, hey, the Fed's still at zero, the stimulus is coming, second stimulus package could be coming, maybe as soon as the spring? Would that be good enough for you?
Yes, I think that I am still medium and long term bullish for those reasons you mentioned. And right now it's a race between vaccine good headlines with the new variant of the virus bad headlines. And that, you know, that makes sense for today. And it's a good reason to push the market down. But as the days wear on, you know, the vaccine headlines are going to grow and grow and grow. We know that for certain. And my thesis has always been that the economy begins to come back on late winter. At the same time, the Fed and the government are probably increasing, not decreasing, their stimulus. And I think it could be a relatively inflationary environment at some point in time. And that's what's pushed me on the metals as well as the stocks.
So, Jim, you're long silver. I'm curious what your position, if any of your thoughts are on crude, which, you know, has had a nice run the last, you know, several weeks, but is getting pretty much clobbered today, down about 4% as we're talking here right now.
Right. And it's got to be. And I think it's down about 4% today because of this. It was a big, big move once it went above 40 a couple of weeks ago. I think there's a couple of things at play. The most important is obviously the thought today that perhaps the opening up of the economy isn't going to be as swift as we thought with the new headlines. And you think, remember, we talked about before how when somebody's up to their eyeballs in position, they're kind of got a one eye on the exit anyway. And as soon as that headline hits, they're going to sell crude. They're probably going to be selling the integrated oil names as well, too, because when people look at their portfolio, that's the only thing that lost money. So if you want to harvest some losses, you're going to be selling those as well. So I think they're going to have a difficult time over the next 2 weeks. But I'll tell you this, that the first 2 weeks of January, I'm going to be looking for my long term to be adding some of those integrated names and maybe crude as well.
I think you answered my question about whether it's going to be inflationary late winter would now be an opportunity. So you're saying maybe hold off a little bit till the end of the year after people do their tax loss selling, and then there's an opportunity.
That's my belief, and that's what I'm planning on doing. So we'll see if it works out.
Okay, so that's a good maybe segue to talk about Tesla being added to the S&P 500, because what caught my eye is that it's replacing Occidental Petroleum in the S&P 100, and Oxy's down about 4%. Actually, off its lows from this morning, I will note, it was down over, I think, a double-digit percentage earlier today. But, you know, that, there's some huge symbolism there for sure. You know, Tesla going into the S&P 500, going to the S&P 100, kicking out Occidental Petroleum, you know, it, and Well, I'm not sure where to go with this. Do you have any positions in Tesla? First, I should start there.
I do. I am long Tesla. I got long Tesla a couple months ago on a technical trade. It was in a formation that I really liked. And when it moved above whatever, a bull pennant or something, I bought it. And I'm still in Tesla. I talked about it on Twitter, and I still have half the position on it. It's been very, very good. But Tesla, like, do you remember, you know, 2 years ago when, I mean, stimulus was everywhere and the banana taped to the wall traded for $150,000 or whatever it is?
Yep,
I think Tesla is Tesla is one of those things that just, it's a barometer to me to, is there too much money out there? And the answer to that is a resounding yes, it seems like. And so Tesla... Like, you know, just my two daughters who, you know, and both of them, they're engineers, one's an engineer, one's an accountant. They were talking to me about yesterday saying, what is the point? Why would a stock like that trade at these levels? And I said, the point is that momentum is more important than P&E, you know, oftentimes. Right. Yeah.
And as a shareholder, I can tell you, I was a shareholder and I sold out because of some of, you know, after the funding secure tweet storm from Elon, I thought like, this is going to be not going to be good for them. That obviously wasn't too much of a big deal for very long, but does it bother you that the CEO is out tweeting, you know, racy pictures over the weekend about Bitcoin and getting into squabbles with people? And, you know, obviously, you
it's
know,
funny.
He's a billionaire, but you know, more power to him.
He's eccentric when the stock price is going up, but he's a lunatic when the stock price is going down. So it's just all a matter of semantics, right? So let's call him an eccentric right now. And does it bother me a little bit? Yeah, I think that a shareholder of Tesla should want their CEO to be a little more predictable. And, you know, clearly he's not. But then again, I'm 55 years old. Maybe I'm just losing touch with the next wave of the investor class. And maybe they're a lot more forgiving of the pot smoking on air with Joe Rogan or whoever it was. Maybe they think it's kind of funny maybe. So I guess I'm not, I'm too old to comment on these newfangled people.
And I'm waiting for Tesla to replace Chevron in the Dow Jones. That'll be a big moment for me.
That's an amazing that will be a day big as moment. Well.
Yes. Exxon was kicked out a few months ago for Salesforce.com, I believe.
Yep.
So
yeah. Wow, it's a weird world we live in.
Yeah. I wanted to tell you something we don't talk enough about on this show, Aaron, is the Swiss franc. And you brought it up very quickly before. And last week, the U.S. Treasury Department, another parting gift from Steven Mnuchin, they labeled the Swiss officially currency manipulators. The Swiss, as you know, for forever have been doing whatever they have to do to hold down their rock solid franc, be it negative interest rates or actually pegs against the euro. Does that have any repercussions?
I don't think so. I think it does. It's short term. I think when I hear the United States calling other people currency manipulators, I mean, we're supposed to laugh at that, right? That's kind of like a punchline.
I certainly
do. I mean, isn't everybody a currency manipulator? I mean, we do it so openly and then we point this finger at these other countries, which is funny. So I think it's a short term thing. I think what's more important is that, you know, when I look at currency pairs, you know, the Swiss don't have near the debt load that the Eurozone has or that the Japanese have. So that's one of the reasons I like that. I don't have a position in Swiss franc as well, by the way, which I gave a speech at the New Orleans Investment Conference about 4 months ago, how, you know, that's going to be one of the good dollar hedges. And for some odd reason, I haven't put it on yet. And I can't even figure out why. But I think that more the fact that they're more of a responsible country than most is more important. The fact that the U.S. is wagging a finger at them.
It's pretty funny that we talk about the Swiss as being this rock solid currency, but even the Swiss, they're printing francs with the touch of a button. What are they doing with it? They're buying tech stocks.
Buying stocks. They're buying stocks. Isn't that amazing?
Google, Microsoft. Who would have thought?
You got me going now with that. But we're buying corporate bonds too. This is a crazy world we live in where central banks are buying stocks, buying bonds. It can't possibly end well, in my opinion. And there's no way, once you start down this path, it's like not like one day somebody's going to find Jesus and go, hey, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be buying all these stocks and bonds. Because once they're into that, they keep doing it. And to me, it is absolute lunacy. And I think there is going to be a time, and I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, and I don't think it's going to be next year, but when all this ends badly, and I'm not sure how that's going to look, but it's going to look ugly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think Stephen would too, and most of our listeners would too, but you know, I hate to quote Chuck Prince, but you know, the music is playing and you got to keep dancing.
Amen.
Part of me wonders if, you know, a Biden administration with Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary is sort of like, you know, Nixon going to China. If they're the ones who sort of rein this in, it would be totally unexpected. And, you know, it would be interesting to see, you know, Yellen's relationship with Powell. You know, the, I don't know the personalities enough to know what their relationship is, but that could be, you know, sort of a an interesting story that we'll be talking more about next year and the years to come.
Right. And I think there's a couple different elements to the Janet Yellen story. I think when Janet Yellen was named to that position, I think the market breathed a sigh of relief that, you know, Elizabeth Warren had been knocked around potentially that position. And I know that it wasn't realistic because anyone who had could connect dots knew that they wouldn't give up that Senate seat. That'd be ridiculous. So anyway, but when Janet Yellen was there, it was like, okay, maybe it's not going to be as radical as we thought from a top-down administration, and it was good. But it's so funny to me when anyone gets in that position, they start talking about how they favor a strong dollar. But heck, when they're in the, you know, Federal Reserve chairman spot, they don't want that strong dollar at all.
Right. Yeah, it'll be very interesting. Yeah. But, and that's actually, you know, you mentioned Elizabeth Warren. That's a good segue. I wanted to ask you your take on the financials, which I'll note are up this morning in a down tape. The Fed last week gave them the green light to do buybacks and dividends. That's an area that Steve and I have talked a lot about with a lot of guests over the past year to say, like, is now the time? Is there value there? Is there an opportunity there? Do you have a thought, a position in the financials right
now? I do have a position in Goldman, but I did not. I mean, it's not from a – well, now it's from a good level, but I did suck wind on it for a while. But my position for the financials is slightly different. This was a nice thing for them, the news over the weekend. But the reason I have – financials on is because I think there's going to be a pretty dramatic steepening of the yield curve as we move out through the end of the winter and beginning of spring. And, you know, the financials love to ride that yield curve. Sure. I mean, they like low rates across the board as well, but I think they're going to really love, you know, low rates for the first 2 years and steeper and a steeper curve. So that's why I have the financials and I have Goldman, and I might be looking to increase that based on technicals.
I thought the relaxation of the dividend and buyback rules was completely priced in at this point. I thought it was a kind of a no, but yet the stocks are rallying, some of them sizably on the news. So I guess I was mistaken. I guess there was some kind of good news in the stress test data. Maybe that wasn't.
But hopefully it's just like what we talked about with the stock market in general, getting a headline that, you know, I mean, it's obviously a bad headline, but just based on market position. And then we reverse that with the financials. They've been just so beaten up. And people who are looking at some of these other assets that are so overpriced, like the Amazons of the world, and we're like, well, what can we buy? And all of a sudden it's like, hey, maybe, you know, the banks haven't done very well. Maybe they're the next to move. And then this is just a little bit of a straw that pushes it instead of a big headline. As you said, it should have been priced in anyway, but just confirmation of it brings things up.
Yeah, an excuse to buy, right?
Exactly.
Right. And if you're looking for a steepening of the yield curve, Jim, do you trade interest rate futures? Do you have, you know, positions there as well? How would you be trading that? Or is it too soon?
I have not put anything on yet, but when I put it on, it'll probably, you know, it'll just be something simple like twos to tens where I will, use 10-year futures to as a play for higher rates out there. And something that, you know, that won't be as volatile on the inside in 2 years.
All right. And while we're on the subject of volatility, again, when you were last 9 years, I believe that was in September, there's a lot of talk about what volatility was going to do around the election. And you correctly, if I recall, said you were going to be fading volatility into the election. I believe the VIX hit 30 earlier today, and it's come down a little bit from there. But, you know, what is your position vis-a-vis volatility right now?
I think volatility is going to go lower now. I think that, again, I'm of a medium to long-term bull in the stock market. I think vol will go lower for that. I have not positioned myself for that yet, but I have to start to believe, like I said earlier, that as the news, as days go on, we have two competing vaccines. I was at a small gathering and two of the different healthcare worker friends of mine already had been vaccinated out in the suburbs of Chicago last weekend. Sorry, hopefully J.B. Pritzker isn't going to come and arrest me for being at a gathering. It was a small gathering, J.B., I swear to God. And everyone there had either had it or had been vaccinated against it. But anyway, so I think as those headlines are going to start to come out, I think the stock market's going to rally, and I think reflexively the VIX is probably going to go lower.
And speaking of elections, we have another one coming up in about 2 weeks or so, the first week in January in Georgia, which could determine the who controls the Senate. You know, I guess there's some risk there, or that you know, the markets could sell off. Let's say if they perceive something bad in either party winning, would you be kind of fading that move on January 6th?
No, I actually think there's substantial risk there. I think that what, and again, I don't want this to be political at all, but I think the stock market loves, different sections of government being controlled by different parties, so nothing can really get done. I think if the Democrats won both those seats and had the Senate, and then they had to start moving forward with a lot of the tax increases that they talked about, I think the market could have a difficult time digesting that, which is funny to me. I think deep down, a Biden administration, like talking about all those tax increases, if they're really proponents and advocates of modern monetary theory, and they don't believe they actually need tax receipts to fund government or do all the projects that they want, it almost seemed like it was just punitive, just painting. And again, I don't want this to be political. This is from an analytical standpoint. They don't need those tax revenues. So it almost might be a little bit of a relief to him personally to not have to raise taxes if they don't win those two seats. But if the Democrats do win those two seats, I think the market might have a tough time interpreting that.
Interesting. And let's play that out. So let's say they do win the two seats, and then certainly the progressives and Democratic Party, I think there is some punitive sentiment there of like tax the rich, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. And there's no question.
I'm not trying to get political, but could that be offset by the idea that they might actually do huge infrastructure spending or spending in other areas of the economy?
Yeah, sure. It sure will. And then they'll have to announce big spending in other parts of the economy too. And they've already kind of alluded to that too. So like, God closes a window and opens a door or whatever that saying is.
Right.
So
right.
It could, again, the adjustment period is what I would worry about, that the stock market initially reacts to it in a negative way. But then ultimately the story is not so bad for the stock market because they will keep spending. But remember too, the Republicans spend too much as well. So with them, you had, profligate drunken sailor spending along with lower taxes. So I thought that would ultimately have been better for the stock market. But again, if they ramp up spending, again, it worries me. And I'm certainly going to be increasing my silver position in that situation as well, without question.
All right. I think that brings us full circle back to the dollar. And I wanted to end there again, your thoughts again, because you've said, it's the thing you're keying off of. Dollar index trading around a little over 90 as we're talking here right now. Is there a level or levels that, what key levels are you watching to tell you either, the 2-6% scenario of a dollar collapse has gone up substantially higher, or that it's wrong, that, things are going in the opposite direction?
So on the upside, you mentioned my 94 level. I'd say between 94 and 96 for longer term. If it could go above that and look like it's relatively comfortable there, I'll think I'm wrong on this thesis and I'll get out of most everything. I think that with the dollar on the downside, the absolute level is less important than the rate at which it gets there. You know what I mean? So if it skids from 90 to 86 in a matter of a couple days or a couple weeks, I think that could alarm the market and put a real shot in the arm in some of these, what I think are dollar hedge assets. As far as an absolute level goes, if it grinds lower, for 6 months, a year, and then ends up, closer to 80, then I would start to get worried. But I hope that makes sense. It's the pace of its drop that would scare me and I think the market more over the next couple of weeks.
All right. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye out in the coming year and would love to have you back in 2021 to see how things are faring.
Amen. Love to be
then,
back.
Until then, our guest has been Jim Urio, Director at TJM Institutional Services. Jim, thanks for joining us and have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff. Happy holidays.